Blog Talk Radio.
Happy New Year and welcome to 2012. We'll examine ways to shore up and fortify your personal and professional career path this year by developing an action plan that is just right for you. For fun, we'll take a look at the top 10 trends that I predicted in 1998 as I make a few predictions for 2012. And do you have New Year's resolutions to jumpstart your life, or are you a free spirit by passing resolutions, discarding resolutions altogether, choosing otherwise to rely on your own wits to get you from point A to point B? We'll examine the benefits and challenges of New Year's resolutions as we determine the appropriate course of action for you, your job, your business, and your family, and your community life as well. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. I am delighted that you joined us today for another issue and another episode of Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas. Welcome to 2012. We made it into a brand new year, and boy, I'm ready for action, for progress, for reversals of fortune, just for a change of scenery, should I say, from 2011. 2011 was a tough year for many of us. It certainly was a tough year for me, and I am really glad that we're into 2012, and I hope that you'll be able to take this show and look at ways where you can move forward, wherever you happen to be in life, wherever you happen to be in terms of your job or your career path. We want to talk about New Year's resolutions. I want to look back into 1998, a couple of top 10 trends I had some 14 years ago. Gosh, it's hard to believe 1998 was 14 years ago, but it was. And look at some predictions that I'm making for this year, a very important year, politically, economically, and socially, wherever you happen to be. I am delighted that you have joined us today. I hope you had a great holiday season. I took last Thursday off, had friends and family members that I entertained and was with during the holiday season, and that's what the holidays are all about. So it's a way for us to sort of retool and refine our ways and reflect certainly on our religious beliefs, because Christmas has everything to do with the holiday season, and I am a Christian and certainly believe in the birth of Jesus Christ. And for those other Christians, it really was a high moment in our celebratory patterns of traditional rituals, along with those who celebrate Hanukkah and the importance of Hanukkah. I actually wrote about Hanukkah and Christmas in a blog with my website. And then Kwanzaa, which is a secular holiday. It's not really a religious holiday. It falls between Christmas and New Year's. And for many people, they do celebrate and practice Kwanzaa between December 26th and January 1st. So for those, I hope that it was a delightful time to reflect again, to bring community members together, and to really discuss the importance of family and community. And then for those around the world, January 6th is also a very high holy day. For some communities and some cultures, they actually celebrate Christmas straight up to January 6th, particularly in Caribbean islands and other places around the world. So we hope that Three Kings Day, where we believe that the three kings, the three magi, went to visit baby Jesus delivering gifts, will be a wonderful celebration tomorrow. Three Kings Day, I believe, is tomorrow. So we've had a lot of fun, and I'm just excited that Christmas has come, that Hanukkah has come, Kwanzaa has come. Now Three Kings Day is imminently here. But most importantly, that we can reflect on the importance of our existence as human beings, worshiping together, working together, and living together. And most importantly now, looking forward to 2012. 2012 is exciting for me. I am very excited about the upcoming Black History Breakfast that my company is putting on Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. I'm excited because of the legacy that it means in terms of what Black history is in this country. Black history is American history. It's a time for us to reflect on all of the inventions, the sacrifices, the families, the people who had nothing but made something out of nothing, the colleges, the universities that were started certainly in the 1800s, the church community, the inventions, the businesses that prospered and grew for many, many years, all of that sort of added up together to represent Black history. History definitely is American history, and for that, we are bringing in Juanita Jones Abernathy. Juanita Jones Abernathy is a civil rights advocate in her own right, and she also is the widow of Dr. Ralph David Abernathy. Dr. Abernathy was the closest associate to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. When Dr. King came to the Alabama stage and came to Montgomery and was selected as the leader of the civil rights movement, it was Dr. Abernathy who embraced him, who made him his friend. Their families became very close. Both families had four children each. They vacationed together. They sacrificed together. They did an awful lot for this country and certainly for African Americans and people of color in general. And for that, we are going to just celebrate the legacy of the Abernathys, the Kings, obviously, through the eyes and the ears and the perspectives of Juanita Abernathy, just looking at what it was like for her to live during that era, to raise children during that era, to try to operate your home in a way that was respectful and dignified, free of many of the vices that existed during that time period, but also just surrounding yourself with a wall of prayer because you did not know what was going to happen next with the retaliation that took place during that time. Their home was bombed in Alabama. Dr. Abernathy was jailed 44 times. And for that, we have freedom today. We have an opportunity to get the kind of jobs that we want to get. We can live in neighborhoods that just were unthinkable 50 years ago and 60 years ago, and just so many other opportunities and options that are available to many of us today because of the sacrifices of those who were a part of the civil rights movement. You'll have a chance to meet Mrs. Abernathy up front, get to know her, get to hear some of the stories, and she has many, many stories to share with us that she will be sharing at the Black History Breakfast. That will take place from 8:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, February 2nd, at the University of Massachusetts, the Boston campus, in the Ryan Lounge, and we'd love for you to come. I'm actually partnering with Commonwealth Compact, a wonderful nonprofit organization that is a diversity advocate here in the greater Boston area, working with lots of corporations around the United States. So we would love for you to be here. If you're in the greater Boston area, come to the Black History Breakfast on Thursday, February 2nd, honoring all those who have come before us in the spirit of Black history and hearing the wonderful message that will be delivered by Juanita Jones Abernathy. You can go to my website and find out all the information. You can sign up online, and that web address is www.msfconnect.com. www.msfconnect.com. You can go find out her biographical profile is there. You can find out more about Mrs. Abernathy, find out more about the breakfast itself, and certainly go on and register. We are expecting a sold-out crowd. We are looking for you to come and pay your homage where homage is due. So we are delighted, and we'll talk more about that as the weeks go by. Again, I'm also excited about 2012 and particularly January because January has a lot of meaning for me. It's Vision Month. I belong to a wonderful church, Bethel A&E Church, and we talk a lot about vision during the month of January. We actually have a retreat coming up this weekend with the leadership of the church. But it's an opportunity for people just to have, just sort of hit a reset button where you can just start all over again. No matter what happened to you last year, that's done, that's gone. Nothing you can do to change what took place last week, last month, 3 months ago, 6 months ago. It is over with. But you have everything in your power to control your attitude and control some things about 2012. You can't control everything. I'm a big believer that some things just have no control over, but there are some things that you certainly can control in the sphere of influence that you have. One thing that I would encourage you to do in this year, and certainly you can do it this month, is to begin writing down your goals. Begin not just thinking about them, not just putting them in your PDA file or your iPad or whatever kind of personal device you have, but physically writing things down. I really am a big believer that there's some things that need to be written down and looked at over and over again, and part of that deals with your goals, your aspirations, and in the coming weeks I'm going to talk about what it is to establish a vision statement for yourself, a mission statement for yourself. They are different. They work in tandem with each other, but they're definitely different. But how you can do it in a way so that you can have a roadmap for your future. It doesn't mean that everything that you write down you're going to accomplish, but it does mean that this year in particular, in 2012, you can do whatever you can to take your life back, to take things into your own hands, and do it in a way that will bring more meaning and substance and purpose to whatever you do. Now, for some people, that is in the form of New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions typically are great ways where you can just say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z by this particular date, and I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to lose 20 pounds between now and the summer. It just depends. Historically, I've actually participated with New Year's resolutions and put things down. But I've learned in times that I look more long-term, and I look to creating goals and aspirations that I can achieve over about 18 months to 24 months and even longer than that. So whatever is important for you in your life, whether you're talking about a resolution that can be achieved in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, or something that is more substantial where you can really look at almost like a strategic plan for your life where you can look at putting together goals and aspirations over the duration of a longer period of time. And again, we'll be talking more about this longer time duration goal setting that you can do, that it's going to take you some time to really do it, but it's an opportunity for you to really look really hard at your life, look at your career path, look at the things that you need to be about so that you can substantially advance your own cause, your own purpose in the given period of time between 2012 and beyond. That is much broader and much bigger than just looking at a New Year's resolution. So in the coming weeks and months, we're going to bring on different authors that will talk about that. Juliet Mayers is one of the authors that I'm going to bring on in the coming weeks. She has a wonderful new book on networking. We're going to have her on, and we'll have other people who will talk about ways where you can empower yourself, empower your spirit, empower your life in a way that will bring new meaning and new value into everything that you do. Would love for you to bring me some ideas, shoot some ideas my way. You can always go to Tell Carol, that's TellCarole, at mac.com, and help us to develop the kind of programs and shows that will give you personal empowerment, that will empower your life, that will help you to look 24 months out, 18 months out into ways that you can improve your own level of personal performance, your own level of development, personal development within your family, within your job, and within your community as well. So I want to go back and look at some top 10 trends that I put together in 1998. During that time period, I was really big on that, and they're fun to look at now to see what has happened that's different now than then, and to see if actually things have improved as a result of these trends. And these are basically focused on diversity issues and affirmative action, but I'm sure that you can apply it accordingly. Number one is the debate continues between those for and against affirmative action. Well, that was a heated debate in 1998, and I would say it's still on the table. It is still being debated. Some affirmative action policies have been removed or eliminated, but in some instances, affirmative action is as important today as it was 13 or 14 years ago. Number two, extremist groups, including far-right hate organizations and militia units, are on the rise. Now, again, that was 14 years ago. I can remember during that same time period receiving accidentally a videotape from a Michigan militia group, and I actually watched it before I turned it over to the police department for the post office because I didn't want to receive any more of that kind of mail. But I watched it because I wanted to see what they were saying, and I wanted to, and it was very frightening just watching it, just watching the precision of their training. They were doing some target practice and all of that kind of thing. Hate groups are certainly here, and I think they've gotten even more deeply connected to just this whole concept of annihilating people or getting rid of people because you don't like them. There's a group called Teaching Tolerance. The Southern Poverty Law Center in Alabama is very big on tracking down the hate groups, and I get their materials and their information. So hate groups certainly have not gone away. They've just sort of hunkered down and embedded themselves in our society, not just here in the United States, but there are hate groups in all parts of Europe, as are in other parts of the world, too. Number three was corporate downsizing puts pressure on diversity initiatives to produce more quantifiable measurements of success. That's pretty relevant. That was 14 years ago. But more and more, held a session with a prospective client and looked at ways to introduce a diversity initiative into that organization. But increasingly, a lot of organizations, they want a bigger bang for their buck. They want to not only do diversity work, but they want to see the results in some kind of ways. There are companies out there that actually measure diversity work. They are as important today as they were 14 years ago. And I think in every kind of training initiative that we create, particularly in the space of diversity, making sure that there is a return on the investment for the companies we're working with is an important factor of whether you are a valuable consultant or trainer like I am or whether you're just wasting somebody's time. Number four, a big kick out of this, the Internet expands the opportunities for creating diversity dialogue between groups worldwide. Holy Toledo. Now we have social media. And with social media, you can talk to, listen to, talk to people live, go on your video webcam and look at people. Gosh, the opportunities to connect with people across the world, absolutely astoundingly, staggeringly wide and expansive and growing by the minute. The big difference now is that in 1998, in order to connect with people across the globe, you could do video conferencing. It was extremely expensive. There were ways where you could connect with people. Certainly, long-distance rates were still pretty high during that period of time. But now when you look at fiber, this was before fiber optics, but now with fiber optics that has finally reached the shores of Africa and other parts of developing worlds and other cost-reducing ways where people can communicate with each other, such as Skype. People have a chance to talk to each other live on Skype. It's amazing what has happened and how you can not only communicate with people for a couple of minutes, you can do it for a couple of hours just based on the cost reduction, the fact that technology now has made things simpler, more efficient, and more cost-effective. And so number four, we are definitely there and then some. Number five, global diversity broadens the foundation of the concept beyond black and white issues. Again, primarily because of technology and because of the advancement of diversity issues, I really see where multicultural issues and global issues certainly are worldwide. Terminology may be different, but black and white issues haven't gone away. They are important, but there are other issues that are equally as important. Certainly household economic class issues are very big for many folks. Looking at transgendered issues, gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual issues in the workplace, in communities, much more accepting now, in the military, much broader in scope. Gender issues, certainly having teeth to them now, and the importance of women thrust in the workplace and being spokespersons for whole communities. So, yeah, black and white issues, that's just a part of what global diversity is all about. Number six, the business case for diversity gains credibility in organizations nationwide. Very closely tied in with number three in terms of, we used to call this term the business case for diversity, making sure that there are reasons beyond the feel-good to bring diversity, multicultural issues into the atmosphere and into the environment of the workplace. That's what that was dealing with. Number seven, Amistad, the Steven Spielberg film about a black slave revolt, opens doors for teaching Americans about history of slavery. The whole topic of slavery is still on the table for Americans. We have only partially had that discussion. We have not totally had the real discussion about slavery in America. We now know about slavery in Sudan. We know about slavery in Mauritania. We know about slavery in other parts of the world. Real life slavery that's going on right now in other parts of the world. But we still have to have our discussion about American slavery and the impact that it had on so many of us to this day. That discussion still needs to take place. Now, here's a blast from the past of one of our former presidents. Number eight, President Clinton's conversation on race will continue to push Americans to resolve tough racial issues. Again, I'm hoping that this year and beyond, with our presidential races, we will have that racial discussion. We've had bits and pieces of it. We've had fits and starts, but no real concentrated, ongoing dialogue about slavery, about racial issues in the United States where we can really deal with the healing process that has yet to take place. We can't heal until you really talk about what's going on and what the issues are. And I'm hoping that 2012, 2013, 2014 will begin those kinds of discussions. Number nine, top executive positions still prove elusive for women and minorities. And when you look at the Fortune 500 companies, yes, we have stronger numbers with blacks, Hispanics, Asians being on corporate boards. But when you look at the numbers overall, they're still not what they should be as a representation of our demographics changing so rapidly. You think with the changing demographics, which is the point I'm getting ready to make, that you would then have going hand-in-hand leadership that would represent the demographic dynamics that are taking place. So that has yet to be reached in our country. And then number 10, sweeping demographic changes in urban areas offer the greatest evidence of changes and opportunities facing the 21st century. Well, those were some of the top 10 trends I came up with in 1998. Let me share with you now top 10 trends that I've come up with in 2012. And this will work its way to my website. It will probably be a blog posting in the coming days or so, and I'll probably put it on the MSSConnect.com website as well. These are my top 10 predictions for the year 2012. Number one is that we are in a year of political action. There are going to be some amazing things that are going to get done. There are going to be some things that are going to be left on the table and not even discussed or talked about. And there are going to be attempts at getting some policies fortified or changed or modified because we are in an election year. 2012, as all of us know here in the States, we will elect or reelect a president. Now, I'm a progressive, and I must say I am an Obama supporter, and I am hoping that President Obama will get reelected. But on the other side, there are thousands of people and millions of people who are looking for change, and they're looking for a new president. So all of that is going to work its way into what gets done politically and what doesn't get done in this election year. We've already seen it with the recess appointment that was made yesterday for the Consumer Action Board and Consumer Protection. That was done. It's creating a lot of backlash, but it's an important position, and you're going to see more things like that being done by President Obama going forward. Number two, voting is a key issue. I will talk about to death between now and November the importance of voting and why it is important for us to have the strongest turnout possible, because this is an election year, and this is a critically important election, and we have to make sure all hands are on deck. It is shameful, the low percentage, the voter turnout here in the United States versus other countries. Some other countries have 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% turnout in their countries. Developing countries, large turnout. Our numbers are abysmal, and I'm hoping we can get beyond the level of being abysmal and having very strong turnout, voter turnout. So it means that there are going to be lots of voter sign-up, registration, rallies taking place all over the United States, making sure that laws are protected, people are protected, so that they can vote at the poll of their choice based on where they have signed up. So we will be talking a lot about voter protection and voter registration going forward. Number three is I think there's going to be a slow rise of the economy. I think the economy is going to slowly improve. There will be business growth and development going forward, and there will be opportunities for new businesses to begin. There will be opportunities for businesses to restart, companies to get fortified, banks, I'm hoping and I'm predicting will relax some of their stringent techniques and requirements that they have in terms of borrowing money for businesses, for small businesses, so that they can expand their growth and development. So I think that the economy is going to slowly begin to turn probably around second quarter. Second quarter, I think we're going to see some changes. March, April, May timeframe, we'll begin to see some changes accordingly. Number four, and again, we're going to post all this on the website. Number four, people will begin to reevaluate home ownership and traditional life goals that I grew up with, simply because the home market and the homeowner's market isn't what it used to be 4 or 5 years ago, particularly if you've had problems. If you've lost your home, if you've come close to losing your home, it's a different day and time for lots of people. And there are, I think, going to be many more renters now. There probably will be fewer homeowners in the coming years unless we have congressional leaders and leaders in government offices that can understand the importance of trying to help homeowners out and trying to help them move forward. Number five, and we'll probably give 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 next week. Number five, and we're going to come back to this homeowner piece and just reevaluating our goals and aspirations. But number five is education, the importance of education, and more people looking at community colleges and state schools to finish their education versus private education, private universities, because the cost is so high. $50,000 is not reachable for a lot of people. $70,000 in some cases is not reachable for a lot of people. But community colleges and state schools with lower rates, I think, are becoming the affordable choices for many, many groups of people who normally would look at private schools. And this goes all the way back to other school settings, secondary schools that are being reviewed in terms of young people going to private schools versus public schools. Charter schools, that's why charter schools are so popular now, because they provide an alternative education path, and they are affordable, they're free in many cases. Those are the top five. We'll give you more next week. We hope you enjoy your weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk with you next week. Carol Copeland Thomas, and have a great weekend. We will see you next week.